And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. You know, we've had some astounding developments in the news recently in the last several months. For one thing, a few more American people discovered the perfidy and the notorious lies of the Bush administration. You know, for years, they have been lying to us, claiming that they had intelligence that showed that Iran was developing nuclear weapons. And then the National Intelligence Estimate, the NIE, a study report put together by the 16 top intelligence agencies of the United States, was published in late November, which showed clearly that Iran does not have nuclear weapons, does not have the uranium necessary to build them, is not planning to build anything, and even if they started today, it would be at least 10 years before they would have a nuclear weapon. But in fact, they do not. Not only that, but Iran does not have any delivery system. In other words, they have no strategic bomber aircraft. They have no missiles to be launched from submarines, no missiles of ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile range, or intermediate range ballistic missiles, IRBMs. In other words, they have nothing with which to threaten the United States, nor even Israel, for that matter, in terms of atomic weapons. But George Bush was, even as he had this NIE report, for almost a year there at the White House and in Dick Cheney's office, he was lying to the American people, trying to goad Iran into a war, calling the president of Iran, an elected leader, a Hitler, lying and saying that Iran was responsible for all of the IED explosive devices that were killing our young men and women in Iraq. Doing everything he could, claiming that Iran was responsible for al-Qaeda terrorism and et cetera, et cetera. I'm responsible for, I'm surprised he didn't blame them for outsourcing of jobs and the fall of the dollar. I mean, everything possible. Now, all of this was not poor Bush's fault, actually, because Bush does what he is told. He's not very good about it. He doesn't really do a good job of carrying out his duties for the Zionists behind him, but, well, at least he's faithful because he's like a lapdog and does whatever they tell him to do. But who really is the power behind the throne in the United States and Great Britain, in fact, even in the European community? I believe it can be traced back to one family. I believe we must look, dear friends, at the Rothschilds, the richest family on the planet Earth. It was not an accident that just a few months before he ran for governor of the state of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger visited Lord Jacob Rothschild in Scotland. In fact, he flew there with his pal, another toady to the Rothschilds, a man named Warren Buffett. Why is Warren Buffett one of the richest men in the world? Well, it's because of the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds make you or break you. And when they make a man, a rich man, a powerful man, the whole world believes that person has so much money. But usually upon their death, it's found out that they actually owed money. They're in debt. Here's why. They actually never owned one thing. Everything was owned by the Rothschilds. This happened to a man named Maxwell several years ago. He bought up newspapers left and right in England and the United States, including a major New York newspaper. Everybody was talking about Mr. Maxwell until the day he was found dead. It seems that he had slipped off the bow of his yacht in the Atlantic Ocean and died. The story was that his body was in pretty bad shape because it was supposedly partially eaten up by sharks. Everyone was surprised, though, when Mr. Maxwell, at least what was left of him in a coffin, and his family turned up in Tel Aviv, Israel, where he would be buried. Everyone thought Mr. Maxwell was just a nice Britishman of English stock and heritage. Turned out he was a Jew. He was a crypto Jew all along. They said that he might own as much as $4 billion. But then suddenly the world's press announced that he owed $400 million. His family was bankrupt. His two sons were in danger of even being called up before the criminal authorities for financial corruption. The man owned nothing, but he was given a state funeral. And among the people who were at his funeral were the heads of the Shin Bet, the Secret Service of Israel, the head of the Israeli Mossad, and the Prime Minister of Israel. And at his funeral, the Prime Minister of Israel thanked the dead man in his coffin, if you can thank a dead man, for his long years of service to Israel. As it came out, he had been a member of the Israeli intelligence community. He never owned anything. Rothschild owned it all. He was simply another working man, a front man of the Rothschilds. Many years ago in America, in fact, at the time of our first stock market, the gigantic crash of 29, even before that, there was a rich man from New York City. His name was J.P. Morgan. They said he was the richest man in the world. They said he probably is a billionaire as a minimum. Some, though, whispered he's a Rothschild agent. But that kind of talk doesn't get much press coverage, so it was pretty well covered up. One day Mr. Morgan died. You'll still read about Mr. J.P. Morgan in all the books as one of the greatest capitalist financiers and stock market operators in the history of the world. But when he died, it turned out that he had less than $1 million in his banking account. And that $1 million couldn't even have bought a portion of the stock that he owned in some of the largest corporations in the world. How had he done it? How had he pretended to be the richest man in the world, but he was only a simple millionaire? In fact, a little bit less than a millionaire. Insiders knew he never owned anything. It was all the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds, I believe, even own the Christian community. You say, how can that be? What are you talking about? Well, you see, in the early days of cable television, in the late 60s and 70s, it seems that some people were just grabbed out of thin air and made into televangelists. Jimmy Swaggart, Pat Robertson, Paul Crouch, others of that ilk and caliber. Of course, there was Robert Shuller of the Crystal Cathedral in California, and a number of others, Jerry Falwell of the Moral Majority. These men suddenly came up from nowhere and suddenly seemed to have big cable TV empires. How did they get there? How could a man, look at Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, they're a laughingstock. Look at Paul and Jan Crouch, who now own over 2,000, supposedly own over, I need to couch my words very carefully here, over 2,000 television stations. How did they do it? Was it the money from the little old ladies and men, their Social Security checks, that they sent in to these con men extraordinary? No, dear friends. You see, realizing that cable TV was in its infancy and that there needed to be a voice for Zionism in the Christian world, these people were placed in their positions by the Rothschilds. It did not surprise me to discover that when the PTL network got in trouble because of the stupidity and the homosexual depravity of Jim Baker, and yes, Tammy Faye Baker was a bisexual lesbian. Should I say these things about her now that she's passed on? They are true. She's never admitted most of it, although in her own biography, she says that she experimented with lesbian sex. In her own words. The fact is, Jim Baker was a homosexual man who was into pedophilia. And he loved to swim and bathe naked there at the swimming pools at the PTL club at Fort Mill, South Carolina, with young boys. And his chief lieutenant, Mr. Taggart, has now admitted that he was a homosexual, and he and Jim Baker, quote-unquote, enjoyed homosexual acts together. Jimmy swaggered, of course. No one could understand how he was able to go down to South and Central America, and even the tyrants down there, even the Tin Horn dictators gave him an audience. They opened up the biggest city auditoriums and even the squares of cities in Buenos Aires and other cities to Jimmy Swaggart. Why, everybody was stunned because Jimmy Swaggart appeared to be a Protestant and the Catholic Church has such power. Who was opening the doors to Jimmy Swaggart in Central and South America? Why were they making Jimmy Swaggart into a star before it was discovered he is a sordid sexual pervert that not only had sex with a number of just pickup prostitutes, but tried to entice these prostitutes to bring along young girls as young as 8 or 12 years old, so he could have sex with them too. A pervert of a man. How did he become such a star that 50 to 60,000 Americans at a time would crowd stadiums to hear him? And Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, how did they become superstars of this gigantic PTL, Praise the Lord, network? With its own amusement park, I might add, in a gigantic tourist resort hotel in South Carolina. When Jimmy Baker fell from grace, should we say, and it was discovered that he had paid, I think it was $250,000 to a call girl who claimed to be a church secretary but was not, to keep silent about having been sexually, kinkily abused by Jim Baker and his homosexual friend. You see, they wanted a woman so they could do horrible, kinky things with her. They didn't have regular interrelations with a woman. They didn't want a woman for sex. These men were depraved, satanically energized devils. And that's what Jessica Hahn says about them, that they didn't want to have normal sex with her in the hotel room. But when it came out that he had paid all this hush money to her, the elite told Jim Baker, well, you're finished. It was reported on the news that his own lawyer, he, Jim Baker, and Jerry Falwell, who was not even a Pentecostal like Jim Baker, went into a back room. Tammy Faye Baker, who wasn't smart enough to know exactly what was going on, said Jimmy and Jerry and the lawyer went into the back room. When they came out, Jim said, I was forced to sign over everything to Jerry Falwell, a Baptist. I'm so sorry. I messed up. But he said he'd give it back to me later. Oh, yeah, sure he will. Who told him to sign over everything to Jerry Falwell? Jerry Falwell had it for a short while, and it was collapsing. seems that Pentecostals, tongue speakers, didn't like Baptists, like Jerry Falwell. The whole place was going under, so then they told Jerry Falwell, you can't have it anymore, sign it over to Pat Robertson. And the 700 Club suddenly took it over. Really? Yeah, that's right. But they couldn't do anything with it at all either. It was going under, and it finally filed for bankruptcy. Come out to find out, a Jewish billionaire in Canada owned the whole mess, land and all, hotel, everything. Wasn't even owned by the Christians. It was owned by an Orthodox Jewish billionaire from Canada who has ties with the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds, you see, have trillions of dollars, not millions, not billions, but trillions, but it's hidden in combinations. It's hidden in trust. Back in the early part of the 20th century, the Supreme Court of the United States ordered that Standard Oil be broken up for the good and safety of our country. This conspiracy must end. That's what the Supreme Court of the United States, back in the days they were more honest, before they too became polluted. The justices ruled that the Standard Oil Company, which operated as a monopoly in the United States, must be broken up, and they were broken up into at least six separate companies. Humber Oil, Esso, which now is, of course, Exxon. There was Standard Oil, which broke up also into Standard Oil of New Jersey, then Standard Oil of California, and et cetera. Broke up into six parts, but they never really broke up. They just did their little financial arrangements that way. The same people owned them, the Rockefellers, but who do the Rockefellers work for? The Rothschilds. Friends, if you want to understand true history, you must study the Rothschilds and what they've done throughout history. Let me give you an example of this. First of all, the Rothschilds have for many centuries put together an incredible plot that is to end in a Jewish Zionist utopia for this world. When I say a utopia, I mean a world led by the Rothschilds, who will control everything minutely behind the scenes. They control much of it now, but they want more. They want it all, and they want the devilish, demonic ability to put you and me in prison and to kill you at their command. They don't have that power just yet that you and I can be taken away, put in a gulag, and murdered. But they're after it. They're going to get it eventually, they hope, they think. What they intended was that the millions of Jews around the world would be on their side, naturally, because they were Jews, and they do believe that they are the chosen of God to rule the world, and the Rothschilds with their money will be the power behind the throne of the new King David who is to come. They, the Rothschilds, will anoint him. And they will be the court counselors and the court bankers of the Antichrist, the new King David of Israel. And this little nation of Israel then will control the whole world through the banks, through the commercial apparatus, through the oil colossus of the Middle East and of Europe and the United States. They will control it all. The Rothschilds, responsible for the founding of Israel in 1948, which is only the beginning. Now, listen to me very carefully. In 1917, a Rothschild agent named Vladimir Lenin was funded by the German government that was at war at the time with Russia. The bankers of Germany, under Rothschild's order, funded Vladimir Lenin, Leon Trotsky from the United States, and others, as a vanguard to go into Soviet actually pre-Soviet Russia, Tsarist Russia, and to use lies, deception, murders, assassination, and bribes to take over the government. To deceive the people, they pretended to be for the people, for the workers. And Lenin, as his predecessor, Marx, also a Rothschild associate, coined the term, workers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. In fact, they had everything to lose. They were put into chains by Lenin, a Rothschild disciple. Why Russia? Well, there were many reasons, but one of them was very simple. It had to do with oil. You see, in those nations and republics controlled by Russia were great stores of oil. Places like Kazakhstan and others. Great stores of oil. In Siberia, friends, they haven't even started exploring the great stores of oil in that incredible icy province of Siberia that borders our Alaska. But they had already begun from the Baku oil fields to bring out oil. 1917, it was early, but automobiles were already rumbling down the roads. The first evidence of aviation was in the skies, and even the Postal Service in America had begun to use airplanes. And our U.S. Army set up an air corps. And Ford began the first mass production of automobiles for the common man. And oil had become a very precious resource. Where could this oil be obtained? At the time, the number one site for oil production was the Baku oil in the Kazakhstan and all those areas up in Russia, in the Soviet Union, you might say, although it wasn't the Soviet Union at the time. That's where oil was coming out of the ground. Now, it was decided by Rothschild, with his lieutenant Rockefeller agreeing, that if Russian oil could be cut off and made unavailable to the West, the price of oil could be maintained at a decent, that is, a high price. You see, it's like any other resource. If you cut off the supply, the price will increase. The problem was that in the United States, oil had first been found in Pennsylvania, and then a huge strike of oil had been found down in Beaumont, Texas at the Spindletop oil fields. A man named Manny Patillo, a wildcatter, had found oil in Beaumont, a small town of around 5,000, and within months, 100,000 people poured into Beaumont, Texas. Among them was a man named E. Mandel House, Colonel House. He was not a real colonel, but in those days, many people pretended to be army officers because everybody seemed to look up to and respect military men. So E. Mandel House, a Jewish financier and con man in the employ of the Rothschilds, called himself Colonel House. He went down to Beaumont, Texas, and seeing what was going on and seeing how much oil there was in this remote, at the time, Lone Star State, and especially in the Spindletop fields, used various con man schemes to purchase the rights to the oil on behalf of Rothschild and his Illuminati henchmen. And it turned out that Mr. Patillo, the man who found all the oil, basically ended up with almost nothing. And Rothschild and Rockefeller had the beginnings of a great oil empire in the United States of America. And they began to sell this oil from Pennsylvania, Titusville, where the first discovery had come, and then in Texas. It was sufficient to fulfill the world's needs, but then there was all that oil in Russia. And you know, the price just kept sinking and sinking. What could they do but fund the communists to go in? And the first thing the communists did was what? Cut off the oil fields. In fact, go back in your history and you'll find that as soon as the communists took over, you would think that they would want to build a huge industrial colossus in their new USSR, Soviet Union. But Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin, the first thing they did was send zappers down into the Baku oil region, where they could have been the most powerful nation on earth with all that oil coming out of the ground. More oil there than they had in America or anywhere in the world. Because even in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and those nations of the Middle East, oil had not really been found in great enough quantities up until that time. They sent zappers down and exploded bombs and blew up the oil fields of the Baku region. They blew up their own oil. The communists took over the government and promptly went down and blew up all the oil fields and shut off all the oil fields. And those oil fields, dear friends, have been shut off for the most part since 1917 to world production. Oh, to a small extent, in the after Stalin had died, they allowed some of the oil fields to open up, just a few. Now, of course, it's, as we would say here in Texas, Katie barred the door. The Rothschild British Petroleum interest, he owns British Petroleum, and America Standard Oil and Exxon and the others have gone into the Baku region big time. And now they're producing oil like crazy and it's flowing there in the Caspian Sea region. In fact, that's why we wanted Afghanistan to build the pipeline. That's why we wanted Iraq, because not only is Iraq the world's third largest oil producer, but we'll have oil fields going through Iraq, going over into Israel, into Jordan, into Lebanon, and then that's why the Israelis also have conquered Lebanon, and they control the ports of Lebanon. That's where the oil's going, from Israel, from Lebanon, from Iraq, because Rothschild owns Israel. Rothschild is Israel. Rothschild is Great Britain, and increasingly Rothschild is the United States of America. Now they're opening up the oil fields. Why is that? For the first time in the 1990s, these oil fields began to be opened. And American oil men, producers, you know, use Oil Bit Company, Halliburton, and all the others are going like crazy over there to Kazakhstan and all those areas and bringing forth oil from Russia and so forth. Why suddenly are they bringing the oil? Well, there's two reasons how they can do it. You see, China now is a big industrial power and they need more and more oil. The people just need oil. They've got cars now. They've got airplanes. They've got all the industry. They need oil. So Rothschild is selling all the oil to the Chinese. And that is true of a number of countries around the world. There's Hong Kong, which is also China, of course. And Rothschild now finds that they need the oil, and so they're bringing it up out of the ground. When we return in just a minute, we're going to talk more about Rothschild. You'll find out about the six-pointed star, what its true meaning is. You'll find out that Rothschild now has the only banking corporation that is allowed in Red China. They've opened up. And the future of oil and the Rothschilds and the future of the American economy as we continue here on Power of Prophecy. We'll be right back. Hello again, friends. Tex Mars. We have a book for you today, a book that will explain everything you'd ever want to know about the Rothschild conspiracy to control planet Earth. Now, I know there are people out there who would like to tell you that the conspiracy is not a Zionist Masonic conspiracy. It's a Jesuit conspiracy. It's a Bilderberg conspiracy. It's the skull and bones. It's this. Listen to me, dear friends. I want to explain to you, you are my friend, and I want you to know something. In these last days, Satan has put forth a juggernaut, a combination of all the evil forces. You know, I was at a restaurant, Marie Callender's, which is sort of a, I guess, a national chain, and my grandkids and a couple of great grandkids were with me, and we had dinner. And when we were going to leave, I said, well, would anybody like dessert? And a couple of the children said, oh yeah, I want dessert. You know, Papa, I want to have dessert. So we got out a menu, and Marie Callender's makes some wonderful pies, fruit pies. They couldn't make up their minds. There was the razzleberry pie and the blueberry pie and the apple pie. And the strawberry, there are all kinds of, and of course there were all the banana cream and the chocolate cream and all those too, but they wanted a fruit pie, they said. Okay. So I made a little quip. I didn't really mean it, you know. I says, well, why don't you just get a combination pie? You know, in one pan, you'll have a piece of each one. And, you know, they laughed and they said, can we do that, Papa? And I asked the waiter there, can they order a pie that's made up of all of them? And he said, well, no, we don't have a combination pie. So I said, well, you'll have to choose one or the other. Well, they chose apple. You know, maybe you would have chosen a different one. I was sort of leaning to the razzleberry. I didn't know what a razzleberry pie was, but it just looked good. The picture, at least, in the little brochure there. But they wanted the apple pie, and okay, we ate the apple pie. Now, the devil, you know, as the old saying goes, wants his pie and wants to eat it too. Well, of course. And, you know, he is more than obliged to try out every kind of pie. He'll eat a little bit from each one, each offering. He doesn't mind the Jesuits or the skull and bones or the Masons or the Zionists having a separate piece of pie. It's all the devil's food core, and that's what we're involved in today. A lot of people get all stuck with one area. I want you to tell you something. The Bible identifies the foe in the last days. The Bible in Revelation 2 and 3 says it's the synagogue of Satan. But within the synagogue of Satan, there are many houses. It's a neighborhood. It's a whole subdivision. And each one of the houses has its own little blueprint for global domination. But behind them all is this Rothschild empire, the synagogue of Satan. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. If you are going to understand who really controls the Vatican, read about the Rothschilds and the synagogue of Satan. Discover the truth about the Rothschilds and their synagogue. And you'll know about the Vatican and the Catholic Church. You'll even know about the apostate Protestant Church and who really controls it. All the big names in the Christian Church. All the so-called Protestant and Catholic publishing houses. Who runs everything, even the Bible publishing arms? How do you think we've got the NIV and the ASV and the RSV and all the other alphabet versions of the Bible? Rupert Murdoch owns the publishing house, Harper and Row, and Zondervan that puts out the New International Version, the best-selling new version of the Bible. But who runs Rupert Murdoch? Is it not the Rothschilds? Of course it is. You see, the devil has a big, big house. I'm reminded of George Orwell's book, 1984. I was reading it again recently. It always resonates with me. He says in his book, 1984, that one of the most feared places was the ministry of love. That's right. They had a ministry of love Big Brother had set up. It was there they took you and tortured you. Oh, isn't that just like the devil? What sounds so good, the ministry of love turned out to be a huge pyramid-shaped building. Then there, of course, was the ministry of truth that actually put out propaganda and lies and control of the media. It, too, was shaped in the form of a pyramid, George Orwell said. And towering 300 meters up, that's over 900 feet into the sky, was this giant white pyramid. Oh, like a White House, but a pyramid. The Ministry of Truth, or as they call it in news speak, their new language they had developed, mini-truth. He said in the book 1984, there were 3,000 rooms in just the upper portion of the pyramid. But underground, there were a corresponding 3,000 rooms. A total of 6,000 rooms in that building. Isn't that interesting? Above ground, the pyramid had 3,000 rooms, and below it had 3,000 rooms. Well, Satan has many rooms in his pyramid of evil in these last days. But what is the umbrella for all of them? It is the synagogue of Satan. Yes, the Jesuits are an evil group. Yes, the Vatican. Yes, the apostate Protestant so-called church, which is not a church. The Order of Skull and Bones, the Alta Vendita, the P2 group over in Europe. All of these are evil. But behind them all is the synagogue of Satan. And that's where this book comes into play. By the Britishman Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. I was privileged to write the foreword for this book. Synagogue of Satan. That's it. That's the name of it. You know, somebody phoned me recently and they said, Tex, I think you've got the wrong title. This ought to be The History of the Rothschilds. That's what the title of this book should be. The History of the Rothschild Conspiracy. Well, you know, the gentleman was probably correct because that's what it is. The story of the synagogue of Satan, at least Mr. Hitchcock says, beginning in 1744, with the birth of a man named Meir Amschel Bauer, a Jew. He was born in Frankfurt, Germany, the son of Moses Bauer, a moneylender. In other words, a financier. Now, Moses, the father of Meir Bauer, who later changed his name to Rothschild, Moses Bauer placed a red sign, this was in 1744, now way back, above the entrance door to his counting house, in other words, his bank. The sign, the symbol, the red sign that he placed above his door, his logo that he had adopted, was a red hexagram, that is a six-pointed star, a red hexagram. Now, the hexagram, which is made up of two triangles married together or sexually linked together, one pointing up and one pointing down, geometrically and numerically translates into the number 666 because there were 6 points. Six lines. Look at the symbol of adopted by the Israeli government, 1948. It is on their flag, the six-pointed star. It is not the Star of David. David never had such a star. It is the Star of Rothschild. He painted it red and he put it on his door of his counting house. And ever since then, the red shield has been the sign of Rothschild. He even changed his name, Rothschild. In German, that is red shield. The six-pointed star painted red is the sign of Rothschild and is actually his name. Red shield, Rothschild, in German. And so it has been since 1744 when Meyer Rothschild, was born. And he set up the greatest banking empire in the world that continues to this day with Sir Evelyn Rothschild, with Lord Jacob Rothschild, and many others. The Rothschild dynasty of Europe and, yes, the United States of America. They control Rudy Giuliani. They control Mike Huckabee. The whole group are all controlled of politicians in America, except for Congressman Ron Paul and a few select others are controlled by the Rothschild, but not always directly. And many times the disciples of Rothschild don't even know it's Rothschild whom they're serving, just as the disciples of Satan often do not know it's Satan whom they worship and venerate without even knowing his name. The synagogue of Satan is the secret history of Jewish world domination, but more than that is the secret history of the Rothschilds. I wish I had more time today because I have the book by Mr. Hitchcock in front of me. It's well over 300 pages, including a very impressive index. And you'll discover year by year the notorious works of the Rothschild dynasty. From that day in 1744 when Meyer Amschel Rothschild was born until today. Do you think 9/11 was an accident? No, the Rothschilds were involved in it in one way or another. Do you think that our war in Iraq was because Saddam Hussein was developing atomic bombs? You're a fool. The Rothschilds had a hand in it. And there will be a World War III with the explosion of nuclear bombs. And believe me, the Rothschilds will be behind it just as they were behind World War I and World War II. Because the same Colonel House that I told you about who came and bought up the oil fields down in Beaumont, Texas. And then Rothschild, of course, closed up the Russian oil fields and the price of oil skyrocketed at that time. That same Colonel House went to work in the White House and ran the White House during the 8 years of the Woodrow Wilson administration. Later, another Rothschild agent, two of them in fact, a man named Bernard Baruch and then another man named Morgenthau, told Franklin Roosevelt what to do. And he began World War II. Was it simply because the Japanese attacked us? If that were true, then why did we prosecute a war against Germany? Well, you say they had a pact with Japan to go into Japan's aid if anyone declared war against Japan. Yes, but why did Hitler have a pact with Japan? What was that all about? And who put Hitler in power? Was it the Rothschilds? Can anybody be so evil and insidious as to bring up two great isms in the same era, communism and Nazism, and how both of them fight and combat and conflict each other? It's called the Hegelian dialectic, friend. Marx was taught that. And the Russians believed in it. And even the maker of the false theory of evolution, Mr. Darwin, believed in the Hegelian dialectic. That's what evolution is all about. And all of these people were funded by the Rothschilds, and their books became big hits. Their ideas were accepted by all the media. And so it was that a man named Scofield, a crooked, corrupt lawyer, abandoned his wife and suddenly became a member of the Rothschild secret society and exclusive club called the Lotus Club in New York City. And he came out with a Scofield Bible, and whoosh, Zionism took off in evangelical Christianity among the Baptists and the Assembly of Gods and the Pentecostals and many more. All because of Rothschild money. Friends, if you don't know the influence of the Rothschilds and their founding of the synagogue of Satan and of the nation of Israel, of Zionist Christianity, the Hagees, the Falwells, and all the others, you don't know true human history. The devil would have to have Rothschild. If the man's name had not been Meyer Rothschild, it would have been somebody else, because the devil needed a Rothschild. He has always needed a Rothschild for his plan to work. It was in 1770, Mr. Hitchcock explains in this book, The Synagogue of Satan, that Rothschild funded the Order of the Illuminati and put a Jewish so-called Jesuit priest named Adam Weishaupt at the head of it. Can you imagine? A Jewish man named Adam Weishaupt, professor at the University of Ingolstadt, founding the Order of the Illuminati and infiltrating all the Masonic lodges in Europe and later the United States. And he was a Jew funded by Rothschild, and he became a Catholic. And he was such a good Catholic that they made him a professor at a Jesuit university. But he was a devil man who brought the whole of Europe practically into the fold of the Illuminati. And from that came Karl Marx. Out of the teachings of the Illuminati, he brought forth his books, The Communist Manifesto and Das Kapital, The Capitalist. And the train was on the track for communism and Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin. Everything is engineered. It is not by accident. It is only if we can find out who is running the train, who funds the train, that we will be able to put a crink in their world plans for Jewish domination of this globe. The Jews, too, will be the victims. Yes. Oh, yes. The Jews, I want to repeat that. If you're a Jewish person listening to me and you're angry, hot under the collar at Tex Mars, you must understand you are going to die if the Rothschilds get their way. We are here to save you, too. You may have been flattered so much that you believe the Jews really are God's chosen race, a superior race. Hitler taught that about the Aryans. Now you as a Jew believe the same thing about the Jews. You've been lied to. The Bible doesn't say that. The Bible does say God has a chosen people, and they're chosen from the foundation of the world. And 2,000 years ago, the Messiah of these chosen people came. And all who believe in him are now his chosen people. The Synagogue of Satan. $20. $4 shipping and handling. $24. Dear friends, if you don't have this book, you've got to get it. Andrew Hitchcock has written a masterpiece of a book. No one would publish the book. No one in America. Are you kidding me? Of course not. But we did. We published it. I wrote the foreword. They told me the Jewish ADL will come after me. Well, no doubt. They told me the Israeli Mossad may kill me. Well, maybe. I'm not being dramatic. I'm just telling you the truth. Maybe I better tell you something else, too, so you'll know right now in advance before something happens. So you'll know. In offering this book to you, I know my life is in jeopardy. I want you to understand something. First of all, I don't believe in committing suicide. I won't commit suicide. Why should I? I smile every day. I'm the happiest man on this planet. I know where I'm going when I die. I'm going to be in the arms of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. If I die 1 minute from now, I'll be a happy man in heaven. Why would I kill myself? Are you crazy? I'm loving what I'm doing. Exposing the devil and his secret societies and the synagogue of Satan. I want every minute of breath I have to tell you the truth about these people and their notorious, nefarious, infamous plot against true life. I'm a happy man. So when you read someday possibly that Tex Mars shot himself in the head, I want you to cry out with everything in you, baloney. Now I want to tell you something else. I don't turn on my computer and watch porno. I am not interested in the least in having sex with children. Why do I tell you that? Because if you open up your newspaper one day and Tex Mars has been arrested for porno on his news, in his computer or whatever, you'll know what happened. They planted it. That's the way it is. You'll know, and I want you to cry out and just holler out baloney. Now, let me tell you something else. I don't take dope. I have never smoked a marijuana cigarette. I've never even tried one. I confess, as a young kid, yeah, I hijacked a few cigarettes and tried them. Even a couple cigars once. Boy, was I sick over that. Kids out there, don't try a cigar. I hope it does make you sick if you smoke one of those cigars. But I can tell you this much. I found out right away as a young 12 or 13 year old, you know, hiding behind the house trying out a cigarette for the first time. That's nonsense. Who would want to put this stuff into their lungs? I don't want that junk. I threw it away. I don't take dope. I don't take meth. I don't sell it. I don't use it. I don't even like prescription drugs, although I have to take an antibiotic every once in a while or something. They even make me sick. I don't like them. I don't need them. I don't need them to make me go. I don't need them to make me stop. I don't need them to tranquilize me. I don't take it. So when you open up the newspaper someday and Tex Mars has been arrested in some big drug bust, possibly, I want you to close up the newspaper, turn to your wife or your husband, and holler out, baloney. It ain't going to happen. Oh, well, I mean, that you may see that in the newspaper, but you'll know it's nonsense. I suppose they've had a hard time getting rid of me. Maybe that's why I'm still here. I don't have any porno. I don't have any dope. If Wanda were to catch me reading an issue of Playboy, she'd stuff it down my throat, or maybe she'd gouge out my eyes. But I don't have to worry about her doing those things because I don't buy Playboy or any other magazine. You're not going to find that stuff either with me. I'm going to tell you what my greatest life joy is, exposing the conspiracy, preaching Jesus Christ and the truth. I get my kicks from that. I get my highs from that. I love what I'm doing. Why do I say this? Some people say, well, Tex, you're wasting your time. We already knew that about you. We trust you. We have confidence in you. Well, now you can tell your friends. And remember, if and when these things come out, you'll say, baloney. I'm just giving you sort of a heads up because I know of a lot of friends that have been arrested on trumped up charges. Oh, by the way, I do have a weapon for protection. But you know, I don't have any bazookas. I don't have any bombs. I don't have any bomb-making material. I don't have a 50 caliber. I just have something that, you know, if a coyote comes around my home, wants to eat my little dog, I'm going to blow it away. And if some black-suited guys with a battering ram come knock on my door and they're not the police and don't show me identification, well, I'm going to blow off their kneecaps. Because it could be the Israeli Mossad, could be anybody. They better identify themselves, and they better have a warrant. So I'm giving them, you know, that too. But I will be asking them, who is it? And they better answer. And if they do, and if they do have the right identification and all that, then fine. Come on in. Drink a cup of coffee. Search the place. Whatever you have to do with your search warrant. But you better be legit, or I'm going to blow your kneecap off. But I don't have a lot of guns. I don't need a lot of guns. Just got what I need. I'm not a real gunman, but I believe in gun rights. I believe in the Second Amendment. And if you want to have 1,000 guns, well, wonderful. I'm for it. You can buy an army tank. I'll be happy for you as long as you're a peaceable guy. I don't own one. I own just enough to defend myself and my family and my home. And that's right, my little dog. I'll defend my little dog too. Don't mess with Daisy, my dog. Why am I saying that? Well, because if you read in the paper someday that Tex had all this armament and all these bombs and bomb-making equipment, you too can scream out, baloney. It ain't going to happen. I don't have those things. There's too many friends of mine that have been arrested on these trumped-up charges. They may arrest me too on trumped-up charges, but at least my good friends out there will know they're trumped up. Now, this is the longest commercial I've ever done. Are we on part two of the program, Sandra? All right. We're still on the Rothschilds today. Sometimes you'd have to tell. I've never told people all those things. I believe people just have confidence in me. They know I don't take dope. They know that, you know, I'm not a gun crazy. They know all these things. But nowadays you have to, you know, be careful. And by the way, I don't threaten anybody. I'd prefer George Bush live as an honest man than die. Yes, I would. And if he's going to die, well, let the Lord take him. I'm not going to do it with my hands, and I don't want anybody else to. I don't want anybody to even throw a rock at an authority. So if you find out one day Tex Mars has been arrested for threatening somebody's life, it's baloney. Because Jesus Christ will love you to life. We don't kill. We do believe in the commandments, unlike the Bush administration. Now, the synagogue of Satan, $24 postpaid. Call us to get the book. Toll free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. You will not be sorry. We haven't had, I don't know, one book that's ever been returned of the synagogue of Satan. You will be shocked at the discoveries in this book. And it's documented. I mean, it is an incredibly documented book. $24 postpaid. We'll take care of all the shipping and everything for you. You can use your charge card. All you have to do is call us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. Write to us and send us $24 and say, Tex, send me the Synagogue of Satan. Well, I won't send you the Synagogue of Satan, but I'll send you the book about him, okay? All right, just a little inside joke there. Our address, Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733 to order the book. And, of course, we're on powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. And you'll want to keep going on there. About once a week, we put new articles on there, and we put some videos and things like that. I think you'll greatly enjoy it, powerofprophecy.com. Well, today we've been talking about the Rothschild, the six-pointed star, the hidden dangers of the six-pointed star, the Rothschild dynasty and its plot to control the world. I'm Tex Mars. Been a great pleasure being with you today. And as far as the New World Order goes, I say baloney. And my prayer is you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.